This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hour three here on The Score. He's Arthur Arkush. I'm Rick Camp. We're here with you until 10 o'clock. In about 20 minutes, we'll switch over to some baseball. Russell Dorsey from MLB.com covers both sides of town, which can get expensive, at least gas-wise, when you're out in Arizona. But we give him credit for that, that he's able to do that. So there's a lot of intrigue with the Cubs. Chris Bryant, still a Cub at this point, which I find kind of fascinating. And with the White Sox optimism as well, and their win totals, at least according to Pecota, being so close. But mentioned something that I was wondering about with the quarterbacks, and it's not the free agents, not the guys that are about to be traded, but Arthur, I wonder what the impact is of the possible, you know, rookies from a certain draft class that are deserving of extensions that might get them this summer or in this offseason in terms of Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson. And how does that, or how do you think it might affect the quarterback market for the Bears or other teams that are looking for alternative quarterback options?
Yeah, got to have the microphone on. Sorry about that. All roads also lead back, of course, to the 2017 draft when it comes to the Bears and the quarterback conversation. And
salt meat wound.
Rick is absolutely correct that Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson are eligible for the first time for their second NFL contracts this offseason, and certainly are in line to cash in with record deals. So between the two of them, it's probably just a matter of which guy goes first. Although, you know, Patrick Mahomes' earning power is a little bit higher right now than Watson's.
Just a bit.
And Watson's is high enough, obviously. I'm not sure that it necessarily is going to affect a team like the Bears, who are looking in just kind of a different stratosphere for quarterbacks. You know what I mean? It's just when you're in different tiers, I don't know how relative it is, but I do believe very strongly when it comes to in-house extensions. I don't remember if we were saying this on or off the air, but Allen Robinson is a perfect example. Mm-hmm. A couple other wide receivers getting ready to cash in. Again, they might be in a slightly different tier than him when you're talking about an Amari Cooper or a Chris Godwin, but those guys are going to drive the price up so insanely that the Bears, it would behoove them to get the Allen Robinson deal done now if they know they want to keep him. So that's a little bit different, I realize, but I think whoever is going to be in the Tom Brady market, for instance, is, and I don't believe that's going to be the Bears, maybe someone like the Raiders. We've seen the reports. It might be a little bit more relevant for them because Brady, I'm sure, is going to command $30 million a year. And I don't know what the Mahomes deal looks like. I would imagine if Kirk Cousins can get $84 million fully guaranteed, a good chance that Patrick Mahomes is going to raise that precedent for a fully guaranteed deal if we don't see something where he's looking for a share of the salary cap, which I've seen other reporters speculate on in recent years. If ever there was someone who was going to kind of break the mold and be a paradigm shifter, if you will, it's pretty clear that would be Patrick Mahomes who would get that type of a contract.
Yeah, that's fascinating that it could be one of three different directions, either your standard form of contract, the maybe taking a year less or so than he probably would in that standard form, but getting everything fully guaranteed, or going percent of the cap. That's really intriguing. And at that point, you almost wonder, since he's the one that's going to set the market, does Deshaun Watson want to wait for Mahomes to sign his and kind of set that and, you know, blaze that trail for this offseason? Or does he just want to not mess around and just essentially get his giant check?
Yeah, it's a great question. I'm not sure who, I don't believe they have the same representation. I would need to check on that, but it's, those guys are going to be paying close attention to what the other is doing. I want to say Aaron Rodgers and Matt Ryan did their most recent extensions around the same time. Must have been two off seasons ago now. So you find these guys who kind of at least should be in the same conversation.
Yeah.
The Bears will be having, of course, a very different conversation. So, I don't know. Again, I just have this feeling. It's not, I don't have any intel or anything. It's just a hunch that Ryan Pace is going to be super aggressive. But then there's the whole, you know, if you put all your eggs in the quarterback basket, then you have left the tight end position and the offensive line and finding a new edge rusher. You're really limiting your options in that regard. So I'm of the belief that it may not matter unless you've got the quarterback and he's the guy who's supposed to raise everyone else in their level of play. But it'll be interesting to see if the Bears agree.
And killing two birds with one stone could happen with like an Allen Robinson extension, maybe lowering the cap number for this upcoming season, right, giving them a little more flexibility to either have money for the quarterback or fill a couple other holes that they end up having. And yeah, it's just such an interesting time going into the offseason. Is there a quarterback path that, like, what would you do if you were in charge? Like, what would be your at least first thing you would go for? And then what do you think is most realistic path for what Ryan Pace will do?
Yeah, I think it's not really going to excite anyone much at all. I realize that, but I really believe even someone like an Andy Dalton, and I was saying this before Bill Lazor became the offensive coordinator, so for what it's worth, and of course now there's even more dot connecting because Bill Lazor worked with Andy Dalton and oversaw his best, I think his second best season. But I just think that I think that Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace are both going to be pretty willing to concede athleticism and special traits and what they saw in Mitch Trubisky, mm-hmm, just for someone that they can feel comfortable is going to find the right receiver, consistently make sound decisions, and run the offense that the Bears want to run, and not have to tailor it so much. Whether they're willing to or not, you know, is a different question. So I think Andy Dalton would make a lot of sense on a even smaller scale, someone who would possibly come in and compete in a pinch, maybe someone like a Nate Sudfeld has also worked with both John DeFilippo. I think just John DeFilippo, but someone who the Eagles thought highly enough to make sure that Nick Foles left, you know, for Jacksonville last, mm-hmm, year. He ended up getting hurt right away. And then, of course, Nick Foles, another interesting name. All three top Bears offensive coaches have worked with Nick Foles in Matt Nagy, Bill Lazor, and John DeFilippo. But when you look at that contract, I feel like it's more realistic that they're thinking a little longer term, that whatever interim plan they have for this year, if it doesn't pan out, Nick Foles could be a legit kind of top target for them in 2021. I don't think that's what I would do, but I'm just telling you the familiarity and how much that matters, sure, in the NFL. I also think they're going to double dip. I don't know if it'll be with one of those second rounders, but Pace has to draft quarterback. I mean, the fact that he's only drafted Mitch in 5 years,
right,
has compounded his miss, right? Because, yeah, he hasn't had any other options to try and to sort of lessen the damage that has come with Mitch's slow development.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the name before. Remember when Washington traded a lot of assets to get up to take Robert Griffin III? A lot of people kind of gave him the side eye of, why are you then taking Kirk Cousins in the fourth round? Well, Kirk Cousins ended up being the guy and, you know, tiding them through at least for a while. He wasn't great or anything, but, and especially when Ryan Pace comes out and says, I want to draft one every year. Right. In theory, I would love to do that. And of course, that's much more philosophical than realistic to do every single year. But yeah, like the one, and mind you, I have not watched tape or anything like that, but the fact that there are so many quarterback names this year makes it intriguing to think one could fall, and maybe not to where the Bears are in the second round, but if, I'm just spitballing, let's say, because now you can trade comp picks, let's say they're a better second round pick and the comp pick they get for Adrian Amos, trade up higher in the second round to get, Washington. Why am I? Jacob Eason. Mm-hmm. I almost said Jake Locker. Mm-hmm. Not the right guy.
Yeah.
But Jacob Eason, that could be something that would make sense. I don't know. Something about Jalen Hurts just makes me, I just don't think, just because he's an Oklahoma guy, just because he was with Lincoln Riley, doesn't mean I think he's going to be a good quarterback necessarily. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't trust him.
Yeah, I hear you. His intangibles are incredible.
Sure.
That's what you hear about first with him, just the leadership and his football IQ even. But he's still learning the position, obviously. So that's a project. That's someone you would probably draft with the intention of maybe having a Taysom Hill type package for him. but not someone I think you're going to want to have to throw into the fire and rely on for 60 snaps or whatever per game. So
franchise quarterback then? If it's a Taysom Hill, if it's a Taysom Hill package, then time he's 30, franchise quarterback.
The Saints' whole deal this offseason with all three guys free, I realize Taysom's restricted, but with Teddy and Drew free and then Taysom Hill potentially able to leave, it reminds me a little bit of the Vikings a few years ago when they made that great run with Case Keenum, who, you know, obviously relieved Sam Bradford, and Teddy Bridgewater had suffered the preseason knee injury, so he's done for the year. And then all those guys are free, and who do they end up with? Kirk Cousins. So I'm pretty sure it's going to be Drew Brees back with New Orleans next year. I'd be pretty surprised with anything else, but I was thinking about that. I don't remember either yesterday or today, just that there are actually some strange parallels there. I think Jake Fromm is the guy who intrigues me. Okay. Someone I think can potentially be available as a top 50 guy. The Bears pick at 43 and 50 as of now, obviously. And it gets back to what I was saying about sacrificing the special traits for someone who you feel really comfortable with as a thinker on the field. Mm-hmm. And that's what they say with Jake Fromm is he has seen a ton. Obviously, he's got high-level experience in the SEC. You'd have to think maybe the Bears learned their lesson about a lack of experience coming from North Carolina, a lesser conference. So that's a guy I kind of can't get out of my head either. But again, I think they're going to spend on a veteran, and it wouldn't stun me at all to see one of those top picks. And I've seen a lot on Twitter if they're going to try and parlay those picks and get into round one or something like that. Yes. That would probably be a little bit of a stretch just because there's so many other needs. But again, Pace is going to be aggressive. I'm convinced of that.
712 Texter in the Tech Zone is brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time, shop online at rosenhyundai.com. Is wondering about a guy that we saw a lot in this area, Cole Kmet, the tight end from Notre Dame, and if he'd be feasible to be there with one of those second round picks and if he would make sense for what the Bears want to do.
Yeah, I think so. I don't think he's going to be kind of instant coffee, if you will, where he's going to come in and tear things up and be your leading receiver as a rookie or anything like that. But an intriguing guy, especially on the receiving side. I think he's got a lot of blocking improvements he can still make. But let's be real. I mean, in the NFL nowadays, if you can come in and be a difference-making receiver at the tight end position, that's great. That's what the Bears would love.
Absolutely.
And someone who can block a little bit too and just kind of make their scheme as unpredictable as possible, obviously. But yeah, I think he will be on their radar for sure. Obviously, his dad, a former Bear, and like you said, there are local ties, so that would be a neat story. And then the Texter's also wondering about Bryson Hopkins from Purdue, who I've heard good things about. I haven't watched quite as closely yet. I think somewhat in the similar mold of Kmet, maybe not quite as big, maybe not quite as exciting as an athlete, but someone who right now is more ahead as a receiver than he is as a blocker. Mm-hmm. And someone else I would expect them to have an eye on. Both Bryant's, the kid out of Florida Atlantic, and the guy from Washington too. One's Hunter and one's Harrison. I think they're going to probably be looking at both of those guys too. We really cannot overstate just how badly the Bears need to upgrade the tight end position. Yeah. That's why I think that's the other one. If there are kind of two spots that they'll attack in free agency, the guess here is quarterback and tight end. I don't know if they'll be able to afford an Austin Hooper or something like that, but I could see him being a top target where they try and get into a bidding war.
Is Austin Hooper's an odd one to me just because of being in that offense, and I just don't know if he's like that dude to deserve real money, or if he's more of a function of all the attention that went to Julio, that went to Calvin Ridley. Do you think he is like that good?
I don't know. Okay. I think that whoever is going to sign him is going to overpay, but let's be real. That's what free agency is for.
You
almost always do that, especially if you're in early and kind of the first wave of free agency day one and whatnot. But no, that's my biggest concern, would be leaving Matt Ryan and leaving a passing offense that's so conducive with those studs out on the perimeter. And that's no slight on, Allen Robinson, obviously a dude. Anthony Miller has shown signs of being one, but until we know, if there's a competent quarterback, a consistent and competent quarterback to maximize that, I would definitely have concerns there. And I also think Austin Hooper's numbers are kind of similar to Trey Burton's, at least what he did his first season here. If the Bears feel comfortable that they can get that back in 2020, then maybe it's, I don't want to say redundant, they're different players, but maybe the ceilings are similar.
All right, we're going to take time out, come back, switch gears, go to baseball. And this time we're going to stick with baseball, I promise. Russell Dorsey from MLB.com is going to join us. Talk about both sides of town as we're getting spring training underway. Even a lot of guys have been there for a couple weeks already, but it's an intriguing time in Chicago baseball as we start to approach this season. He's Arthur Arkish, I'm Rick Camp. We're here with you until 10 on The Score. The bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Join Northwestern Basketball at the new Welsh Ryan Arena this season. Remaining home opponents include Illinois, Penn State, and Minnesota. Single game tickets to see Chicago's Big Ten team are on sale now at nusports.com. Welcome back. I'm Rick Camp alongside Arthur Arkish. We're here with you until 10 o'clock. Happy Valentine's Day to everybody. But right now, we're going to go out to the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. We haven't spoken a lot about baseball tonight, and we need to because there's a lot of interesting storylines going on with the Cubs and the White Sox. So let's welcome in Russell Dorsey. Follow him on Twitter at Russ_Dorsey and the number one. Writes about both teams in town for MLB.com. Russ, how you doing, man?
Rick, Arthur, how you guys doing?
Doing really well, and the thing that's top of mind for me is we start looking at what's going on with both of these teams. Everybody's been saying the right things, but how long is it going to be tenable without being a huge distraction for Chris Bryant to be in camp with the Cubs?
I think it's one of those things that after a couple days, the report date is Sunday, Chris will get here, get to Arizona. He'll meet with the media, and after that, everything will kind of fall into place. Right now, like you said, it is one of those times where people are saying the right things, people are doing the right things. I'm in the best shape of my life. We have everything we need to win, yada, yada. But yeah, that's the big thing. If you're thinking about the Cubs, that's on everybody's mind.
Are Cubs fans in the clear for now regarding the Chris Bryant silence? I assume after teams have made their big moves and kind of done what they're going to do with their payroll planning, he's probably going to be a Cub at least until July. Is that safe to say or not so much?
Yeah, I think that's the case. Everybody pretty much has their roster set.
Yeah.
There's precedent for trades during spring training, but I wouldn't expect there to be any movement between now and opening day. But yeah, the trade deadline as of right now seems like it would be the day for Chris Bryant to no longer be a Cub. But you never know what could happen. Like, one of the things I'm interested in, let's say he has a monster first half and you get to the trade deadline and he has a 900 plus, maybe 1,000 OPS, you're winning ball games. The division is you're either leading or it's within reach. Do you even trade Chris Bryant at that point, especially with an extra year control after the grievance? You might be in the spot where you say, you know what, let's ride this thing out for at least another year, and then we have the offseason if we want to trade him.
Speaking with Russell Dorsey here, follow him on Twitter at Russ_Dorsey and the number one. And for me, one thing, and we mentioned it earlier in the show too, is the three batter minimum, that being officially instituted now, considering right. What the Cubs' pen issues were last year, do you think it's going to change the profile of the type of a guy in the bullpen, that whether it's through David Ross or just how many guys that can either go multiple innings or just be willing to be able to go longer? Does that really change much of the plan of what the Cubs have in their pen?
Yeah, I mean, everybody, all 30 teams are going to have to, you know, really look at their bullpens a lot closer and say, all right, it's not just we can't have a loogie for one guy coming and get a Randy Choate type who pitched in the league forever. You're going to have guys have guys who can get three outs. You're going to have guys who can come in and face guys on both sides of the plate. So it's going to be interesting to see. The one thing's for the Cubs, they don't have some of the old guard that they've had for the last couple of years, like Pedro Strop now with the Reds, or Steve Cishek pitching with the White Sox now. They have a lot of questions in that bullpen. They have a question with their closer, Craig Kimbrel. Can he come back and pitch to some semblance of the guy we've known for all these years? And their other high-leverage guys, they're going to be relying on a lot of young guys that helped them last year. Rowan Wick and Kyle Ryan. Those guys are going to have to really step up. Brad Wick, Alec Mills, Dylan Maples. Maybe this is the year we finally see what he can do in an extended role. So a lot of guys are going to have to take big steps if the Cubs bullpen wants to have success in 2020.
I realize, in light of Campy's question, that maybe the building a bridge to Kimbrel is the bigger area of intrigue, because there have been some changes both with the rules and obviously with their staff. But given just how poorly, I believe he used the word terrible, things went for Craig Kimbrel after his in-season arrival. What do you anticipate? Do you think that the full winter and spring makes the big difference for him? Better health? What do you envision? Do they get that future Hall of Fame lockdown closer that they were envisioning last year when they signed him?
I wouldn't put any stock in his results in Arizona. I think once we get to April or the end of March and April, I think that's when we'll really see, all right, which Craig Kimbrel are we going to get? Where's the fastball at? I'd say if there's anything you take from spring training, that's what you want to see. Is the fastball sitting between 96 and 99 miles an hour? Because velocity was down last year. So after him getting this full spring training, after not having it last year, is the velocity there? Is he healthy going into the season? And then having a guy who can bridge it and get to the ninth inning and get to Craig Kimbrel, that is the question. Like, they brought in Jeremy Jeffress, who had a down season in Milwaukee last year, and they picked him up on a one-year deal. But that's a guy who, he's a year removed from being one of the better setup men in the National League. So we'll see. I would imagine that Craig Kimbrel, it should help that he has a spring training to get ready. But I guess until we get to live games where guys are going 100%, we won't know.
I'm sure Cubs fans will be very even-keeled and patient if Craig Kimbrel has a slow start to the spring. I'm sure that's
Absolutely.
All right. So I thought Albert Almora yesterday was, I always appreciate when guys are willing to open up and be really honest with the media, and the fact that he was about just his routine and how he had to change it in his day-to-day and what he's doing, considering there hasn't been a deal that we maybe would have thought would bring in a possible center fielder of the future. How big is Almora, maybe, I'm not even saying getting to really above average starter level, but just him bouncing back to a respectable level to where you can trust him more often than not when you put him into the lineup?
No, I think you're correct. If you think about Albert Almora and the profile he had when the Cubs drafted him, this was one of the best high school players in the country when he was drafted by the Cubs. It seems like ages ago. And to have the struggles that he's had at the big league level, yeah, he was really honest about it. And I think, to the Cubs' credit, they've given Albert Almora Jr. every possible opportunity to show that he could play in the big leagues, and not only play in the big leagues, but be a starting center fielder for them in the big leagues. So that change was something that he had to do. There was no – he kind of got fortunate that the Cubs' finances were where they were, and they weren't able to really make that move for – a traditional center fielder that everybody's been expecting. And after last year's, we have to look past projection and look at, performance that Theo Epstein and company were talking about. We didn't have that change. So Albert Moore Jr. is going to have an opportunity to help the Cubs in center field in 2020, probably in a platoon with Ian Happ. So we'll see what happens there. Like, we've seen that pairing before, and it hasn't necessarily been one that's been productive at the big league level. But maybe with this new change and these new adjustments that Albert Moore Jr. has been talking about, maybe there'll be a jump in production for him this year.
Yeah, it's certainly going to be interesting to watch kind of that the battery, if you will, the reclamation battery, and how those guys are able to try and carve out a little bit more solidified roles at the plate. Certainly, I guess it's encouraging that Almora hasn't taken some of his issues at the plate into the field, where he's remained brilliant. There's not a lot of other questions regarding the positions for the Cubs, but what do you think about second base? Because I think that's the one other area where a little bit of uncertainty about what's going to happen and what type of production is going to come from that spot.
Yeah, you have a kind of a hodgepodge right now of Daniel Descalso, Nico Horner, and David Bodie. And right now, it would seem as if Nico Horner is the guy who has the inside track on the job. But I guess you never know. Like, let's say the Cubs want him to develop in AAA. that's certainly a possibility. He's probably the best option they have there. I think the profile that he brings you offensively is one that's really attractive in keeping him on the big league club and let him be the second baseman. Obviously, he's a guy who has really strong bat-to-ball skills, puts the ball in play, pretty good speed, and can really make things happen, even though he's not, you know, that bopper that we've seen Cubs lineups have. That probably his offensive profile probably balances out your lineup a little bit and can break up some of those guys who may have struggles controlling the strike zone.
On the south side, heard about some, you know, it sounds like varying degrees of injuries early in camp. The one that maybe poses the most of a red flag to me is Gio Gonzalez, and considering, you know, where Michael Kopech is as well, what do you expect to see early on from the White Sox rotation, and what's going to be the patience with Kopech and where he starts, you know, probably, I would assume, probably starting in the minors, you know, relative to what's going to possibly be happening with the health of a guy like Gio Gonzalez?
Yeah, a couple little nagging type of things. Obviously, the one that's probably the most minor is Lucas Giolito had a really bad case of the flu a couple weeks ago and kind of slowed his progression to getting in, ready for spring training. So they're just taking a little slow with him. Yasmani Grandal, a little tweaking in the calf, but he's been catching bullpen, so wouldn't think too much about that. Like you said, Rick, the one that is really concerning is Gio Gonzalez's shoulder. Shoulders aren't, you don't want to hear a guy has shoulder problems this early in the camp. I will say this, and Arthur knows this from covering the NFL and covering a lot of training camp. That first couple of weeks, when you go from going 40 or 50% to going 65, 70 or 80%, you're going to have, your body's going to take a little bit of time to adjust to that. So I wouldn't be overly concerned. To get to the second part of your question about where I think the Sox rotation will be, I think a lot of that will fall on the shoulders of Dallas Keuchel and Lucas Giolito and Dylan Cease and Reynaldo Lopez. Like, those guys are going to have to, you know, show really early on that they can pitch and that they can get outs for this White Sox team. I expect them to be able to put runs on the board. I expect them to hit the ball out of the ballpark. So if they can get outs, that's the really big key for the success of the 2020 White Sox.
Speaking of Keuchel for a minute, I know it doesn't really pertain to the 2020 White Sox, but I am curious to get your thoughts of what he had to say about the scandal yesterday and just the, it seems to me that his, well, kind of underwhelming explanation, apology, whatever you want to call it, that's about as big of a, I don't know, as big of a red flag as there's been with the White Sox this offseason. So I guess depending on which way you want to look at it, that could be both a good thing, but probably not what some people wanted to hear him say.
No, I think when you look at the apology he gave a couple weeks ago at Sox Fest, that was, you know, it was off the cuff and it was responsible. And, you know, he was the first one from that organization as a former player who came out and was like, hey, we were wrong. And I apologize. And, you know, I think that was refreshing for people. But hearing the debacle that was yesterday across baseball from so many different people, I think the thing that stuck with me is the idea of, well, everybody's doing it. And I think for me, that was an issue because if you get caught doing something and you're at the forefront of it, I think what people want the most is, hey, listen, we were wrong. We admit we were wrong. We were proven to being wrong. We've been found out. We got caught. And we take full responsibility for that. I don't think people wanted to hear, well, yeah, we were wrong, but other people are doing it too. Like, people don't want to hear that. So I think that was disappointing from not only Dallas Keuchel, but from all the responses we heard around baseball. And I have no clue. To be honest, like, there's so much fallback from this. Like, you never know where it can go. Like, every day we can get something new.
He's Russell Dorsey. Follow him on Twitter at Russ_Dorsey1. He reads his work on MLB.com. All right, this is one that I'm probably just making myself mad. If I set the line at Edwin Encarnacion bunts at 0.5 this season, which way are you going?
Campy, I would love to tell you take the under, but
it's gonna happen.
You never know with Rick Renteria, but having fun with that, I will say if we're betting there's more home runs than bunts, I think that's a bet you can put money on.
Okay, good. I know it's gonna infuriate me all year. It's going to happen. And like, there's a lot of good aspects to Rick Renteria as a manager.
Right.
But that's just one that I'm just never going to be on board with. There's so many or so few individual instances where to me it's okay to bunt, where it makes sense to bunt, but that's like a 10th or a 20th compared to the situations where Rick Renteria is down for it.
No, I think that's one of the interesting things that I'm excited to watch for this White Sox team is how does Rick Renteria manage a club with expectation, with talent, where I'll give him credit. Sometimes with some of those teams that we saw 2 years ago, 3 years ago, where there was maybe one or two guys in the lineup on the roster that you were saying, all right, that guy can't beat me.
Mm-hmm.
You had to manufacture and do whatever you could to kind of create offense, but now you won't have that issue. So I would be surprised if we saw the number of bunts that we saw over the last couple of years.
Russell, last one I have for you. Thank you so much for the time. I'm a Cubs fan. I think most people know that, but I am trying to get my White Sox knowledge up to speed. And I'm just kind of curious, is there in this huge offseason that has everyone around town excited, and I think everyone around baseball has kind of taken notice, what move matters the most? What are you either most curious about, or just what do you think is going to have the biggest positive influence on this team this season as far as the newcomers go?
For me, I think it's the arrival of Luis Robert in center field. This is a guy who has all five tools. He can run, he can hit average, he can hit for big power, he can go get him in the outfield, and he has a really strong arm. So this is one of those guys, when we look back in 5 years in this White Sox rebuild, if that guy is, let's say, 80% of what people expect him to be, that bodes really well for the White Sox. So I think this is a guy who can easily – he's one of the front runners to win AL Rookie of the Year this year. And if he can – you know, there's going to be some struggles, but I think the talent will outweigh those struggles. And we're going to get to see a really fun player at Guaranteed Rate Field for the White Sox.
Do you have him in the leadoff spot day one, or do you just kind of makeshift that until you feel more comfortable with him?
I am a non-traditional type of guy, even though I'm a baseball lifer, played the game, and I understand the not disrespecting the game. I am a guy who thinks you put Yasmani Grandal in the leadoff spot until Robert feels comfortable, and then you make the switch. But, you know, Yasmani Grandal is one of the best in baseball at getting on base, and that's how you score runs, getting guys on base. And then now you have the type of lineup where you can move guys and not just have to go station to station. So I vote Yaz in the leadoff spot until Robert's ready for it.
All right, it's great to get to talk to you, for at least for, you know, I think for our instances, first time getting to talk to you on the air, and I can't wait for the first time that Aloy is in the lineup hitting seventh. I'm just torturing myself. I don't know why. All right.
Right.
Appreciate you, man. That is Russell Dorsey. Follow him on Twitter at Russ_DorseyM, the number one. See, like, I'm excited about this White Sox season, but there are still just some of those things that are just annoying me about Rick Renteria. And I hope that because the profile of this team has changed a bit, that he will adjust accordingly. But it's just some of those dumb things, like bunting as often as he does, or, you know, your guys that you're trying to develop in a year where clearly they weren't winning last year and you're still hitting Aloy seventh
right,
pretty often is frustrating. Park him in the middle of the order somewhere and let him do his thing. Let him learn, let him cook, because that guy is going to be a part of this offense for a long time, or at least he should.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I'm quietly intrigued by what Renteria is going to do. Again, as a Cubs fan, you all know, he got a raw deal on the other side of town.
Yes.
And it's cool to see this opportunity for him. And you would think if ever there was a good reason to kind of be willing to adjust a little bit, that this would be it. So maybe we do see a different manager and someone who's ready to try and go out and maximize this, because the White Sox suddenly are talented and they're suddenly appearing like they're gonna be in the conversation for a while here.
312-644-6767 is the number. 670-11 on the text line. Want to open it up to you, because we've covered a lot tonight. We've talked about the Bulls and All-Star weekend, some about the NFL and the Bears quarterback situation moving forward, some moves that could be made around the edges as well to give them some flexibility, and what we just talked about with Russ there on the baseball side of things. We want to know what you think. Text in 67011. Give us a call. He's Arthur Arkish. I'm Rick Camp. I promised the English language is my first one, even though it doesn't seem like it at times. And we're here till 10 on the Score. This segment's brought to you by your Chicagoland Papa John's. Papa John's has done it again. They've created the all-new Papadilla. It's not a pizza, and it's not a sandwich. It's something in between. Try one of four flavors, Philly cheesesteak, meatball, pepperoni, grilled barbecue chicken, or their signature Italian for just $6. Better ingredients, better pizza, Papa John's. All right, Arthur, do you have to make up not being home for Valentine's Day? Is there kind of already something added to a honey-do list? Like, I know for me, it's a little different. My wife already knows we just always kind of punt Valentine's Day anyway. So do you get out of this scot-free, or do you actually have to like make this up at all?
Yeah, fairly scot-free. The wife was working tonight. She's okay. A veterinarian, so she works late. And she's off tomorrow. So we've got the boys, and actually it's Hub's birthday is also Valentine's Day. Oh. So shout out to Hub. Happy birthday. We're going to have dinner over at his place tomorrow with the whole family. So we'll kind of merge a post Valentine's Day celebration for my wife and family. Yeah. We were on vacation last week too. So we've kind of been, I don't know, celebrating for a while now, but, nothing, there's no additional honeydews. So that's cool. Not that I wouldn't, you know, welcome a few more or whatever,
sure,
but,
I'm not at in least the doghouse,
so that's good. Yeah, at least on the record, right? So, so it's all good. And I was going to say, if anyone wants to call in and let us know if they've got Valentine's stories or qualms or unusual
plans.
Have
you ever had anything like blow up in your face, trying to be either romantic in terms of doing something thoughtful for your wife or an ex-girlfriend, or trying to show someone that you care at that point in time? Because, like, I know I've had a couple not great ones.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Started in third grade. Third grade, wrote my first love note to somebody.
No kidding.
Yeah. Jory turned me down, as she should have.
Oh, no. It sounds like this is stuck with you.
Choose me?
She did not choose me. Not even close. Nor should she have, really, at that point. But, it's not great. Shocking to pretty much nobody. Don't have the best track record here. I just found someone that was, you know, I love my wife. We work really well together. And at a point, I'm just like, she hasn't left yet. That's good on her, because Lord knows I give plenty of reasons to. And she stuck around. So, and really, that's what love is.
Well, she's pretty lucky, too, especially if she likes to learn about basketball and...
And food.
And food, exactly.
And
I was going to say,
though,
dude, in third grade, that's pretty impressive, even if you didn't get the result you were looking for.
Yeah, to have the gall.
Exactly. I don't have any stories that go back that far. In fact, I don't really have any fun stories at all. I've always tried to be romantic, but I don't know. My definition of romance, I don't know if that's ever really worked with the girls. I guess it's been okay.
312-644-6767, 67011 on the text line. Times where your plans just kind of blew up in your face, or it just didn't quite go to play. It doesn't have to be a full-on disaster where you tried to do the right thing and it just didn't quite work out. I think that's part of what we're here for, because I'm assuming that if there's people listening to us right now, they've probably had some times where Valentine's Day's blown up in their face.
Right. It might have happened about 30 minutes ago.
That's
so
very
the
true.
The more recent, the better. Call us and let us know.
And if, you know, something bad has happened as a result of you being adamant that you listen to this show, well, then that's on them, because you're making the right choice. I'll make that blanket statement. That's fine. That can't come back to bite me in the ass at any point.
Oh, no.
No. But, all right, so on Twitter, I saw at Arthur Arkish, you put out the clarion call for Bears questions.
Mm-hmm.
And I also love the K thanks bye is one word.
Oh, yeah.
Because that works out perfectly. But so is there anything that we're not thinking of right now that's kind of got that you're intrigued by as we're kind of in this down point before we hit the combine?
With the Bears now?
Yeah, with the Bears, outside of necessarily the quarterback situation that we've spoken about a lot.
Yeah, I think that the biggest, I think the trickiest decision outside the quarterback position for the Bears this offseason is what to do with Leonard Floyd.
Mm-hmm.
$13.2 million is a lot for the production that he has provided really throughout his first four seasons, but more so last year, his first fully healthy season and his first fully healthy season opposite Khalil Mack.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone expected, you know, and certainly he was the buzziest player coming out of Hallis Hall last spring.
Oh, absolutely.
Because Chuck Pagano, Ted Monachino.
Finally converting the speed to power.
That's right.
Was it week one or was it in the preseason?
Week one.
Yeah, when he had the bull rush.
On David Bakhtiari,
a
stud left tackle.
And everybody was like, whoa, it's finally going to click. Leonard Floyd's going to be that dude. And it's really just, he's that dude against the Packers.
He had two, and give him that. He has been throughout his career. But yeah, he had two sacks, I believe, in the opener. And then obviously one sack in the final 15 games. So, I think he's a solid player. I actually just wrote about this today over at Bears Insider. I just think that, you know, your best player obviously is Khalil Mack. He's the most expensive player on mm-hmm. defense in NFL history. So you'd like to think that you don't need to spend a bunch to make sure that you kind of can maximize him. But at the same time, you sort of have to. You know, when you look at the other decisions for the Bears, they need potentially a new starter at linebacker next to Roquan Smith, and they need a new strong safety next to Eddie Jackson. Well, Eddie Jackson's 26. Roquan Smith is 22. Khalil Mack's 29, and you'd like to think that he's got a couple more years in his prime, but I just think that you need to make sure you insulate better against what happened last year where Akeem Hicks gets hurt, Leonard Floyd doesn't fill the bill, and all of a sudden Khalil Mack has six sacks with a couple games left to go, doesn't get to double digits for the first time since his rookie year. So I think what Pace does with Floyd, whether it's extend him, I believe we mentioned Allen Robinson in that vein, mm-hmm. but also Leonard Floyd potentially as an extension candidate who frees up some cap relief in the early part of the deal, because he's not a $13 million per year player. He's probably more like a 8-ish or so.
Yeah.
So can you guarantee him 16 total? And I'm not a cap expert, but I know there are a lot of ways you can do this to add flexibility now and then maybe have a deal that's a little bit more commensurate with what he offers. So fascinated to see what they do there. And I also think that outside of the quarterback position, the spot that's unusually flush in both free agency, especially free agency, I haven't gotten into the draft enough just yet, but there's a ton of options out there for veteran pass rushers off the edge, and not all of them are going to get tagged. So I think there's an opportunity, I should say, for Ryan Pace to really improve the spot opposite Mack or even keep Floyd and then still go out and get someone else, whether it's in the draft or free agency, just to make sure that any time Khalil Mack is getting double and triple teamed, you have someone on the other end and someone other than Akeem Hicks in the middle who you're confident is going to win mm-hmm. and Mack's not going to just not sniff the stat sheet in a couple games like he did last season.
And hopefully that would help quell my other concern defensively is the depth at outside corner scares me because, what was it, anytime, you know, Prince Amukamara would maybe miss a few plays here, a series there.
Mm-hmm.
Where you're just kind of, everybody was just kind of holding their breath of waiting to see if whoever was out there, whether it was Kevin Tolliver or if Duke Shelley came into the game, were they going to get exposed? And, you know, at least in that regard, the Bears have been relatively healthy within the secondary.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think they've been able to kind of skate by with that a little bit of, I don't know how much you trust Kevin Tolliver at this point. You know, clearly a guy that was all the raw tools, but just needed to be taught, essentially, like right. the finer points of the cornerback position.
Yeah.
That would be, I don't know if they have it in the budget this offseason, but maybe it's a middle round pick or something, just to be able to give a little bit of insulation there if there's an injury at the, especially the outside corners.
Yeah, I think that that's a kind of a sneaky big concern. I do like Kevin Tolliver, though, and I mm-hmm. thought that he acquitted himself well as a rookie a couple years ago when he played for Prince out in Arizona. Remember, undrafted out of LSU. He was a five-star prospect coming out of high school and just not only needed to learn the game, but I think needed to learn how to be a pro a little bit and buy in. And it and by all accounts, that's been happening with the Bears over his first couple seasons. But I've liked what I've seen of him and would like to see more. Now, are the Bears convinced enough that they are potentially, Prince Amukamara is another potential extension candidate, but I think, unfortunately, more realistically, approaching his age 31 campaign and after taking a pretty noticeable step back last year from where he was 2 years ago, he's also a possible cap casualty, and they can save about $8 million there. So I would imagine that what else they do at the position kind of, you know, hinges on what they decide on Prince. I can tell you that he would be a, and listeners probably don't care about this, but I'm going to say it anyway, he would be a monster loss in the locker room because he is as good of a pro and is great with the media. He's the reigning Good Guy Award winner, and he just goes about it the right way. But again, he's going to be 31 years old. There's no guaranteed money left on the deal. And they do like Kevin Tolliver. I know that Chuck Pagano in particular took an early liking to him when he arrived last spring. So they've got Buster Skrine, who really, I thought, exceeded expectations at the nickel, but not someone I don't think you want to play with too much outside. Sure. And the two kids they drafted last year, Duke Shelley and Steven Denmark, are complete unknowns. Shelley played a little bit on special teams, another undersized guy, even smaller than Skrine. So I don't think you're viewing him as a boundary corner. And I don't know about Steven Denmark. He was a seventh round, you know, flyer last year. But remember, coming out of Valdosta State, converted wide receiver with these freaky measurables is what Ryan Pace called him at the time, I believe. So we'll see what a second full offseason can do for him after he spent, I want to say, I think he spent the duration of his rookie season on the practice squad.
312-644-6767 is the number, 670-11 on the text line. He's Arthur Arkush. I'm Rick Camp. We're here with you for one more hour. We also want to know from you, text us, call us with the times your Valentine's Day plans just kind of flopped. We're all here for it. We laugh at each other. And quite frankly, if you're listening to us right now, there's probably a good chance that's happened to you in the past. It's probably happened to everybody at some point anyway. So let's laugh at each other. That's what we're here for. And also, any thoughts you have, Arthur's here. He's in charge of the Bears at all times. He is right there. Well, not in charge of the Bears, but in charge of Bears
Thank
coverage.
God for that.
Yeah, seriously. That would not be great for you at the moment. And, you know, the celebrity game. No, we're not going to recap the NBA celebrity game. Forget that.
Anything you guys want to talk about, holler. Let's do it.
Yeah. It's Friday night. Let's have some fun on the score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.